Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. Years ago, I offered a series called The Crash Course on the Bible, and this summer I'm going to go back and review some of that material in sermon form again. I've done this before, so that we as a church can continue to grow in our study and our knowledge of God's story through the Bible, and how these happenings still carry meaning for us today. So I actually already started that a couple weeks ago, but I was out of order. So we've talked about the Tower of Babel, and we've talked about Noah. And I think, well, now I need to loop back and I need to go to the beginning. I have in past sermons, in other series, talked about creation a good bit, but I do want to go back to the beginning and talk about creation perhaps with a different trajectory. So today it occurs to me that one of the very places, the best places to start is the beginning proper. So how about we start there? This is Genesis chapter 1. And those of you that are watching online, I believe Elder Desiree has kindly posted a PDF of our slides for today. So, and if you're live, you can access that as well. So that's available for you to follow along. Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light, and God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness God called night. And there was evening, there was morning the first day. And God said, "Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters. Let it separate the waters from the waters." So God made a dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so, and God called the dome sky. And there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the sky be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters were gathered together. He called those seas. And God saw that it was good. And then God continues to create. God is creating vegetation, and God sees that that is good. God creates lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night. God decides that that is going to be good, that everything in creation is going to be good. Summing up in verse 19, there was evening, there was morning, the fourth day, and the poem of creation continues then after that until it culminates in the creation of whom? I gave it away. Whom? Adam, the first man. And Adam in Hebrew means something like hairy, earthy human, Adam. It's a very earthy word in Hebrew, and it means sort of like from the earth, red, earthy creature. And God creates Adam at the end, and God says it is very good. He creates the woman, the man and the woman, and says it is very good. And then in chapter 2, the heavens and the earth were finished in all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that God had done, and God did what? Rested on the seventh day from all the work that God did. So God blessed the seventh day, hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that God did in creation. Well, this text in Genesis teaches us about something that is so important and basic that we could forget that it's there. Our world, our cosmos, these beautiful trees, the birds that we hear singing, they are all made by a creator. And here's the thing, the way that Genesis talks about that creator, the process of creation is the creation of a poet. It's the creation of an artist. God creates like a poet. As you read Genesis, you'll notice that there isn't some technical blow-by-blow analysis. We don't read, and then God created the Higgs boson, and here's the equation to find it. We don't read that in Genesis. So everything that we read is undergirded by physics and chemistry and biology. It shows up a little bit differently in actual science than it did as these pre-scientific folks were writing. And yet, even that scientific language is not capable of capturing the immensity and the beauty and the majesty of creation as we know it. My understanding is, and there, if there's a physicist out there, you can correct me, but I've heard this quoted a number of sources, that Physicists can explain about 5% of the universe in terms of what it is. 5%. The other 95% is what we call dark matter, meaning we don't actually know what it is. That's a lot of unknowing about the universe. As advanced as our science is, that's a lot of unknowing. John Polkinghorne was a celebrated physicist from Cambridge who worked with some towering figures in 20th century physics. After some major career breakthroughs and milestones, he decided, as a scientist, to become an Anglican priest. I once heard him talk on a podcast called On Being with Krista Tippett about physics equations. And he said, the thing about physics equations is they're beautiful. He said, you wouldn't want to tell a physicist that her equation was messy or ugly. She would be very upset. Physicists delight in equations that are beautiful and simple at the same time. You might say poetic. God creates like a poet. When I sat down to write this message, I was in Starbucks last week, and I put on some headphones. I turned on a streaming service, and I saw on that service a piece by Brahms called The Double Concerto for cello and violin. When I was growing up and playing the cello, I used to dream of playing this piece. I used to hear the masters play it over and over on my record player, and I had not heard it for some time. But when I started listening to this piece in my headphones, I soon realized that this was a wonderful, beautiful recording of a beautiful piece. My ears have not been that happy for a long time. They were just overwhelmed by beauty. God created us with these capacities. The world as God created it is not a machine world. It has law-like regularities that hold it together, but it is a world with beauty and poetry. This world is also a world of plenitude and abundance. It's abundant. You ever notice that when you want something, to buy something, there tend to be multiple versions of that thing? I have a tablet called an iPad, and I think I read recently that there are now 68 different versions of an iPad. Every time I have to replace one, I go into a crisis because I don't know which one to get because there are so many choices. What kind of storage do you want? What kind of screen do you want? And if I bought a little bit more, would I get this better, faster processor with more memory? What about cars? Some of them have amazing new features on cars these days, safety features. I almost feel guilty if I don't upgrade and pay the extra money to get the extra safety features. And we can go on and on about buying up in features when we have to buy something, computers, televisions, coffee makers. And wouldn't you like the next better product at least occasionally? What about building a house? Before our family moved into the home that we were now slowly remodeling and refreshing, we were serial model home visitors. You ever been a model home visitor? We were serial. They probably all, oh, here they come. Those are the people we've heard about. We filled out every visitor information card within a 20-mile radius. And the builder, I noticed, always has a base price. That's the one I think I can afford. And I'm walking through this beautifully decorated models, and then I come to learn that that actually costs 30 to 50% or more than the one that I think I can afford. So I once said to a salesperson, well, what if I just build the base model? She looked at me as if somebody had slapped her, and she said, no one ever builds the base model. It was like I had said something sacrilegious. I felt like I needed to apologize. She said, in 20 years of doing this, no one has ever built the base model. What she was telling me was that everyone wants more than the basic version, and eventually they'll pay for it. Nothing wrong with that. That's the way our economy works. And what I'm noticing about the conversation there is that the beginning is never enough. So I go back and I check my level of scarcity or abundance, and I say, well, I'm going to buy my way up from here. Maybe I'm going to stretch here. Maybe I'm going to stretch here. Maybe I'm going to stretch here. And all of a sudden, I feel pretty stretched. Lots of different directions. The beautiful thing about Genesis is this, my friends. In Genesis, you get everything up front. The luxury, the plush, the abundant, upgraded version of everything. Nothing is held back. The fullness of God is evident in all creation. There's no scarcity. An account drawing upon Time Magazine Earth Day edition in 2000 reads, God's creation is amazingly diverse and completely overwhelming. Why? Only a tiny fraction of all the species on Earth have been discovered and named. Biologists have cataloged a total of between 1.5 and 1.8 million species. Must be a big book. Estimates of the true number of living species range, however, according to the method employed, from 3.6 million to more than 100 million. Astonishing. In one 2.5 acre of Brazil's rainforest, there are 425 different kinds of trees. In one small corner of Peru, a national park, there are 1,300 butterfly species. What does that tell us about the Creator? Our Creator loves abundance, plenty, plentitude, variety. And we human beings show up in different ways. We're all unique. We show up in all kinds of different ways. Amazing. It's really amazing. Do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy it? I mean, do you really root down into what it is and enjoy it? If not, maybe that could be something that could be a spiritual practice for this summer, going on a walk and noticing all the beauty. This trail, Rails to Trail, is a beautiful walk to take to do that, to be in practice and see what God has made. Last but not least this morning, God has created patterns of time to enjoy. Now you say, Dan, how do you enjoy a pattern of time? Well, one pattern of time that most of us enjoy is this thing called vacation. There are patterns of time in life that take us out of the everyday, and we can learn to enjoy and bask in the practice of them. There's an important note here in Genesis. I almost left it out this morning. I didn't. It's in chapter 2. There is a pattern of alternating work and rest in Genesis. 6 days activity, metaphorical days, that's how I hold them, and a metaphorical day of rest, pattern, six on, one off. Six on, one off. Even God doesn't work all the time. God would get fired from some modern jobs today. Even God doesn't work all the time. There's this divine precedent for rest, and I sometimes ask myself, well, who am I to ignore that? One of the tragedies, I think, of the last few months is that we had a lot of stillness and inactivity, but it wasn't restful. You agree with that? A lot of inactivity, a lot of couch sitting, a lot of some of us streaming or TV watching or book reading, but a lot of inactivity, but it wasn't necessarily restful. For many of us, the last few months have been filled with anxiety and stress and uncertainty. And even as we're receiving all this information, we can't digest it all, and it's not helping us to be calm. I'm going to summarize an article that came from The Economist in 2011 that talks about information overload. It reads, there are emails to answer, virtual friends to pester, YouTube videos to watch, and back in the physical world, meetings to attend, okay, maybe not recently, papers to shuffle, and spouses to appease. A survey by Reuters found that 2/3 of managers believe that their data deluge has made their jobs less satisfying or hurt their personal relationships. 1/3 think that it has damaged their health. And there are all kinds of terms, the article says, for this data deluge. Data asphyxiation, data smog, information fatigue syndrome, cognitive overload, time famine, wired, connected to the internet, and at the same time, high, frantic, unable to concentrate. Do you relate? Have you experienced that? God's invention is a rhythm of being on and off, 6 days on, 1 day off. It's a rhythm, and you can enjoy it. It's a pattern of time for you to enjoy. I would put it this way. We call this pattern what? What's the name for this seventh day? It is the Sabbath. This is my way of thinking about it. Sabbath is about doing nothing so that something else can happen. Say that again. Sabbath is about doing nothing so that something else can happen. Abraham Heschel was a great Jewish scholar in the 20th century. He said this about the Sabbath. It's a little deeper than what I just said. And profound. He said, the meaning of the Sabbath is to celebrate time rather than space. To celebrate time rather than space. On the Sabbath, we try to become attuned to holiness in time. On the Sabbath, we try to become attuned to holiness in time. Not many of us experience this shift in time lately. Again, a lot of downtime, but not a lot of holiness in time. It's a lot of frantic inactivity, if you will. But this is at the core of sacred rest. It's creating the space to be completely free of distractions. And so, as I wrap up this morning, I want to invite you into that. You may be at home. I hope you're comfortable. Those of you here alive have some beautiful shade here and a beautiful breeze blowing. It's actually quite pleasant out here. And you look comfortable sitting in your lawn chair, so I'm going to invite you to rest into that chair, and you rest into that couch or kitchen table chair for just a moment. and allow the muscles of your body to relax any thoughts that are causing strain and stress in your life. I'm going to invite you to release that. This is the Sabbath. You don't have to do anything today. Let me repeat that. You don't have to do anything today. This is like the Sabbath, an island of time. The Sabbath is like an island of time on which you get to live once a week for a whole day with no interruptions and stress. That is God's idea, not mine. I'm just communicating it. So I invite you now to release what is causing you stress and strain in life, what is turning around in your mind. I want you just to imagine that. Maybe it's on a piece of paper, you tear it up, throw it away. Maybe it's in a book, you close the book and put it back on the shelf for today. Just let there be some empty space in your heart and mind. Enter into this pattern of rhythm of rest. You are on vacation today, an island of time away from the rest of the world. Pray that you might do nothing today so that something may emerge. In the name of Christ we pray. Amen.